Panasonic's $4 billion Kansas battery plant finally opens, but could it be coming online at a worse time? Frank White pitches another stadium plan, but I thought we had two teams. Why, there's no funding for the Royals in his latest push. Area schools ringing alarm bells as the White House withholds more than $6 billion in education funding. How will it affect back to school where you live? Also this week, get ready for cheaper beer and bars open 24 hours a day. Just one of the measures signed into law by a busy Mike Keogh this week. The Missouri governor also praised for slashing the tax on diapers and tampons, but panned for repealing paid sick leave for workers.
Position A was put together by several million dollars of outstate interest. It was nobody in Missouri who brought that bill to the ballot.
Those stories and the rest of the week's news straight ahead.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
Hello and welcome. Glad to have you back with us. I hope you survived this week of flash floods, water rescues and record-breaking rain. Some of our viewers getting 6 weeks' worth of rain in just a few hours. Well, here to dissect the rest of the week's most impactful, confusing and downright head-scratching local news stories are KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez, former Star reporter Dave Helling. From the world of television news, KSHB's Charlie Keegan, and tracking the region's top political stories for KCUR News, Brian Ellison. Now, we start in Kansas this week, where after 3 years of construction, Panasonic's $4 billion battery plant is finally open. State and local leaders joined with Japanese officials this week in a ribbon cutting at the DeSoto base facility.
Boney.
Well, Panasonic, as you heard, this is the largest factory we've ever built in 107-year history. So that's huge. And then for Kansas, it's the biggest investment they've ever had.
Well, actually, the project is jam-packed with superlatives. Largest electric vehicle battery plant in the world, according to some reports. Largest building in Kansas. But could it be happening at a worse time? Panasonic has announced it's dialing back full production at the Kansas plant due to dropping electric car sales and new Trump administration policies that end green energy tax credits and the $7,500 rebate that has encouraged thousands of Americans to make that switch. Is it just a short-term blip or a worrying sign for the future? Lisa.
Well, it's certainly not an ideal situation to be opening this massive battery plant. As you've said, we've gone from years of creating incentives for this kind of stuff to kind of an immediate end to all kinds of incentives for this. That said, officials and industry leaders have all said they do expect EV production to continue. And despite the fact that I think they kind of have to say that, I do think that the industry as a whole is still moving toward more production of electric vehicle, but I don't think it's going to be the immediate win that we think.
We were always told 4,000 jobs coming to the plant. As of this week, we weren't at that target, were we?
No, we're closer to about 1,100 jobs at that plant. But granted, only one of eight possible production lines are up and running right now, so there's time and room to add more people. It was definitely all good news, though, on Monday's grand opening. No one was talking about the problems that we might have. They were trying to be as positive as possible.
What about the fact that this was the feather in the cap for Laura Kelly as governor of Kansas, the biggest economic development project in the history of the state? She wasn't even there at the event. We had the lieutenant governor there. Can we read anything into that, Dave?
Well, you can probably read into it that Dave Toland will be a candidate for governor, or that they are pushing him to run for governor.
Because they were probably taking campaign video footage.
Right. He had a perfect place for campaign video. He can take some credit for this project. Laura Kelly is trying in some ways to move back in the public's eye a little bit as her term comes to an end, although there was an extraordinary piece in the New York Times this week applauding her approach to governance in Kansas, which I found interesting. But I think the idea is that Dave Toland, who has not declared for governor and appears to be a little on the fence about the idea, is being pushed by someone or maybe his own people to be a little bit more in the public's eye in projects like this.
Brian. Remember that development is actually in Tolan's job description. He's the Commerce Secretary for the state as well as Lieutenant Governor, so it's not so surprising. But here's the thing about this, Nick. I think this is an excellent example of why these long-term massive tax incentive and development funding credits programs are always risky. You just don't know what's going to happen. This started years ago, and it started under a Democratic administration. It started when renewable energy sources were all the rage and on the rise, and you just don't know how political fortunes and world events are going to change the needs. The state of Kansas, it's too early to say there's a real problem here, but if there turns out to be in the long run, Kansas may be learning a difficult lesson about awarding these massive tax incentive packages. Right,
which is why it's so important that deals like this have clawback provisions, that if you don't fulfill the promises you make, that the state will get some of its incentives back. And there are some clawbacks in this proposal and other similar economic development proposals. That hasn't always been the case. Kansas City, the city of Kansas City particularly, has had problems with making sure that all of its investments can be clawed back if projects don't come to fruition. But it's far too early, I think, to panic over this plan.
Well, now that he could be ousted from office in a recall election, Jackson County Executive Frank White is trying to rescue his legacy by hatching a new plan to keep the Chiefs at Arrowhead Stadium. Notice I didn't mention the Royals. While his sales tax proposal would give a third of the cash to the Chiefs, a third to be used for fixing up the Jackson County Courthouse, and a third pot to public health, more specifically to help former Truman Medical Center, now known as University Health, to fill health funding gaps left by Trump administration cuts. And look closely, and you'll see there the $0 going to the Royals. Charlie, why has Frank White given up on them?
Well, I don't know if he's given up on them, if they've given up on him, who's to blame and all that, but there's some decades of bad blood maybe between the Royals and Frank White, and obviously last April's election didn't help smooth any of that over. Yeah. You got to give Frank White credit for getting creative here. He's always said that Jackson County carries too much of the burden for the teams, and he feels like this is a way to kind of reward Jackson County for its years of support for the team's financial.
One little pearl nugget, Lisa, in this whole story was to see that Frank White acknowledging that he has had no meetings whatsoever with the Royals since that failed vote, what is that, 15 months ago? Not one single meeting?
But why would the Royals be motivated to meet with Frank White at this point when they've got so many other options? Kansas City has put itself forward as being very willing to work with the Royals on this. They have lawmakers in Kansas and Missouri that both worked, some faster than others, to get packages put together for the Royals as well. So I think right now there just hasn't been a necessity to deal with Frank White. And if they're going to deal with the county, might as well go through the legislature as well, which has also made itself known as being much more willing to negotiate and with the right amount of votes can overturn whatever the executive
does. A little bit confusingly on this, Dave, is that you've got three different pots of money, and apparently, according to the language, you have to have three different ballot questions. You can't have just one. So if some of them pass and others don't, I mean, this has seemed to be incredibly complicated.
Right, which is why Frank White has suggested that the legislature next winter, in January or February, pursue legislation that would allow him to put all of those in one ballot question. There may be some wisdom in that. I mean, the original tax proposal for the Truman Sports Complex was actually a part of a much bigger public works package that went to voters in the 1960s. So the idea that, hey, if you don't like the stadiums, at least you can get some help for public health or some of these other items may have some wisdom in it. On the other hand, it comes kind of late in the game. I do think that the Royals, for whatever it's worth, Nick, have been negotiating on the Missouri side with the Clay County folks and with Quentin Lucas in Kansas City. They really did cut Frank White out of this a year ago.
Well, perhaps
ago.
They feel, Brian, that they can wait Frank White out. Not only is there all the talk, of course, about the set recall election, but there was a press conference this week among activists to see the immediate resignation of Frank White.
Right. I think it's very difficult to see this proposal from Frank White completely apart from the broader political context of what's happening in Frank White's life right now, his political life. The recall effort is in full swing, whether that election is sooner or later. The reality is that anything he is proposing right now has to be seen in that light. And let's not forget that the reaction to this proposal has been, I would say, tepid at best. The chiefs did not come out and say, yes, we'd love to have the full third of the 3/8-cent tax. They were much more measured in their response. And, of course, even Governor Kehoe, who has called for local support for any stadium plan that goes forward, said, that's very interesting. We do think it's important that Jackson County get tax relief and fair property taxes. He chose to bring that into his statement in response. So I would not say that this plan is on a fast trajectory to approval.
Given all of the complications with this, could this play into the hands of, dare I say it, Clay County? And I did see the governor was just in town signing the Clay County Sports Authority bill that will allow them to sort of start that process of bringing a stadium to that county. Is that just wishful thinking, or is that seriously now on some form of fast track, Charlie?
Well, I think that, yeah, folks in Clay County have to be excited about what they're seeing here in Jackson County and thinking that puts them a little bit more in a driver's seat.
But let's be clear, there has to be a local component. It has to be under the Missouri statute to proceed with the Missouri subsidy. That's either Clay County, presumably through voters with a sales tax, or in Jackson County, some local component of which Frank White's idea might play a role. Now, you know, there might be another way to do it, but Jackson County has to come up with some a bit of money that presumably would have to go to voters. That's why I think, for whatever it's worth, Nick, the Kansas options seem to be rising in the eyes of the Chiefs and the Royals precisely because they don't have to go to voters again. And I think they were really, were beginning to understand that the teams are very upset about the outcome of the April 2024 vote and believe that they have to, if they can, avoid another trip to the ballot box. And that's what the problem is with all of the Missouri options at this point.
Okay, I mentioned Governor Mike Kehoe. He has been exceedingly busy this week. He was also signing a repeal of that voter-approved paid sick leave law. He says it's about saving businesses.
It was put together by several million dollars of outstate interest. It was nobody in Missouri who brought that bill to the ballot. It was bought and put on our ballot.
But this might not be the end of the matter. Hold the front page, apparently. We're learning of a new push to put the issue back on the ballot by making it a constitutional amendment instead of a proposition so lawmakers can't undo it. If that's the case, why, Lisa, didn't organizers just do that the first time around?
I think passing a constitutional amendment, the issue with that is that it creates a very messy and complicated state constitution. And this is just another example of lawmakers, of the governor, undoing the will of the people. We just heard Mike Kehoe say that it was outside interests that brought it to the ballot. It still required a signature from hundreds of thousands of Missouri residents to get it to the ballot, and then passed by the vote of Missouri, of a majority of the state here. And so this is, it's just another example of many examples of the legislature undoing this process by which people can get things to the ballot, and will probably indicate another push by the Missouri legislature to make that power, to make that harder to do in Missouri.
By the way, you know, the governor said it was about saving businesses. Did we see hordes of businesses in Missouri depart, go to Kansas, other places, as a result of that paid sick leave amendment going into
effect
in November by vote?
Not immediately, but we know organizations like the Missouri Chamber of Commerce were against this, and they felt like it was best for businesses to be able to set their own wages and be more in control of that. We know Governor Kehoe is a small business owner, a car dealer for many years, and has, you know, definitely been a supporter of that kind of free enterprise capitalism.
Well, Governor Kehoe also signed several other interesting bills into law this week, including eliminating the luxury tax on diapers and feminine hygiene products. They considered luxuries. Some stories say the tax would be totally eliminated, but it's just going to be reduced, right?
That's right. From 4.25% or so percent, the luxury line, to 1.25%, which is regular sales tax.
Now, also this week, Governor Kehoe tried to present himself as the friend of Missouri workers by cutting the tax on beer, which is already one of the lowest in the nation. In addition, bars on the Missouri side of state line will also be able to stay open 24 hours a day when the World Cup arrives, thanks to a Kehoe-signed bill this week. Does that balance out taking away paid sick leave for workers? Lisa, you get cheaper beer and you can drink it in your favorite watering hole until like 3 in the morning.
I don't know that we can compare them equally there. Certainly, this is something that we expected to happen for the World Cup. It's also something that will only happen for those 2 weeks during the World Cup. So it's not quite a free-for-all yet.
Yeah, well, I think that the comment that the governor made as he signed the bill that this was out of state interest is the go-to excuse for all the Republicans on anything they don't like. And what we do know in Missouri is that the Republican Party does not like voter-approved measures. They believe that they have the wisdom and voters are somehow duped by out-of-state interests or by campaigns or whatever. My guess is it will almost certainly be back on the ballot as a constitutional amendment, and there will never again be, and this is important to understand, a statutory attempt through the initiative process because the legislature can just discard it at will, so everything is going to end up in the Constitution.
Area schools are ringing alarm bells as the White House withholds more than $6 billion in education funding.
Staff are already hired, programs planned, and now districts across Kansas and Missouri aren't sure how to pay their bills after federal dollars didn't show up on payday.
Without a lot of description of exactly why, whether we get the money eventually, so at this point it's a little challenging to know how to react to it.
Now, we're seeing a lot of these doom and gloom headlines about programs being cut, only to see the money restored quickly after the headlines appear. What about this? How is this going to affect back to school where we live, Lisa?
Well, the programs that we're seeing cut are really targeting the most vulnerable population. So schools right now are scrambling to try to reallocate money to fund these programs, but that will, of course, spread other resources thin. So we're talking about programs for English language learners, for refugee students, for after-school care, for adult learners. But these are exactly the types of populations that this administration is also targeting in many other ways. And so it's just another blow to these populations.
So might that explain then why, say, a KCK school district would see a $5 million hit with this, while a suburban school district, like a Shawnee Mission, which we just saw the quote from, or a Lee Summit, closer to $1 million?
Right, exactly. We see in those school districts a lot more of those kind of vulnerable population. In the KCK, for example, a lot of immigrant students over there. And for school districts, it's just got to be more of the head scratching or more like the confusion that comes along with that maybe is harder to plan for than even just doing the work. You know, do we have the money or do we not have the money?
Yeah, but lots of people are feeling the heat and certainly feeling cuts. And we in public broadcasting have our own concerns, as the Senate voted this week, to rescind all of the money going to public broadcasting, Lisa.
Absolutely. It's when we talk about the ways that the Trump administration is affecting lives in Kansas City, this is yet another example. This, for KCUR, for our station, we stand to lose about $500,000 a year, which goes toward all of our local programming, any of our news programming. But even greater is the effect that this has on smaller stations that are less resourced, in rural stations, in Garden City, Kansas, in Springfield, Missouri, where they simply cannot absorb the blow, and where there is not as much of a robust media landscape there. So not only does this mean potentially less quality news, less information, less accountability of our public officials in Kansas City, for some areas of this country, it means no news.
And for us, it's $1.5 million, which is about 13% of our budget. Would you still appear on Kansas City Month in Review, Brian?
Well, I would consider it, Nick, if I can fit it into among the several other jobs I will have to work. No, I'm kidding. But here's what I will say, Nick. This is often portrayed as a large national or ideological issue, but of course, it is a local issue as well, as Lisa explained, and it also is voted on by people who represent local communities. All four U.S. senators in Kansas and Missouri, the Republicans, all voted to make these cuts.
While we're hearing then, of course, of cuts locally, Medicaid, education, public broadcasting, we're cutting money there, but it seems baffling this week that we are seeing truckloads of cash coming from Washington for the World Cup. This week, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver announcing more than $600 million in federal cash to boost transportation and security for World Cup games here next year.
It costs money to make Kansas City and the United States look fabulous.
Believe it or not, he says he's going to ask for more. How come there's no shortage of money for this, but not for basic health and education, Dave?
There's always money for what you want to spend money on, and the World Cup in this is one of them, and they found it, and if they don't have it in the till, they'll just print it.
And perhaps we actually will need more money for security now that you can drink 24 hours a day during the World Cup here, and Kansas City leaders just found out some bad news. That temporary jail they're trying to build won't be built in time for the World Cup. So there's going to be no place to jail people causing trouble during the biggest event in our history, Charlie?
I know, right? The soccer hooligans, they get that nickname for a reason, right? But I guess the city's looking at lots of different options for a temporary jail. They said that the option on the eighth floor of City Hall is the one that won't be able to be complete till after the World Cup. But there is still a possibility of building some, like, modular container-style holding cells on some land that the water department owns way out east by, like, 435 and Front Street. So we'll see if that comes together.
Which sounds terrifying, a container system
like
for
alligator Alcatraz in Kansas City.
Well, we've been focused for the last couple of weeks on this program about this sort of recall election of Frank White as Jackson County leader. Voters in Wyandotte County are going to the polls before then to pick a new mayor. In fact, early voting starts next week. Tyrone Garner has made the surprise decision to not seek re-election, and there's a large group of candidates wanting to succeed him. Can you remind us why he decided not to run for a second term?
He was disappointed, if you will, about the difficulty in achieving political goals in a place like Wyandotte County, and in essence said, I couldn't get done what I wanted to get done.
He felt like a figurehead.
To a bit. And also, you know, his, you know, paper skin thin. I mean, you know, he really resisted the criticism that he got in Wyandotte County, and I think he just said, I don't need this anymore, particularly because of the background of the Roger Golubsky case and alleged corruption in the police department that he was a part of. It was just not his cup of tea, apparently.
A huge field of candidates trying to replace him. Well, what is the biggest challenge for this next mayor?
I think it's going to end up being property taxes and services and managing all that. There's so many people who feel like they're overtaxed, and the county tried to cut taxes, but then ended up having to cut services.
And it's hard to imagine. Garner will be the third in a string of single-term mayors in Kansas City, Kansas. And with a financial crisis decades in the making and kind of an inability to make much progress on that, it's hard to imagine how someone can make any lasting change in just 4 years. I will be looking forward to see if there is a candidate who can make it more than a single term, where we could actually have the possibility of seeing any kind of change and progress.
Yeah. Early voting is next week, and there will be winnowing down to two candidates for the fall election. By the way, remember last week we talked about that newly hatched plan to rename the new-look KCI Airport after President Harry Truman? Well, now it's getting serious. The mayor met with airport officials this week about how to make the name change before the throngs of World Cup fans head here next year. Is there a reason why they want to make that change so soon? Do fans from London, Paris, Ecuador, or Egypt care whether it's Kansas City International or Truman International, Charlie?
I doubt it. You know, I don't know. I don't think about who Hartsfield or Jackson are when I fly into Atlanta. So I probably, I can't explain the urgency on all that.
It sort of really came out very quickly, the story, and it's taking off. But I'm wondering, is there a hybrid here, just like we have GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium? Could this be Truman Terminal at KCI Airport to have the best of both worlds?
Why stop there? Why not just have corporate naming rights for the airport?
Okay. I
put a company in front of it. I do think if our good friend Eric Wesson were here, he might suggest that there's another element here, which is that there are some other names that have been mentioned to get on that airport, including, for example, former Mayor Sly James. And there seems to be a concerted decision to not go that direction. Perhaps that is a piece of going forward with this particular idea.
Quickly, Nick, you mentioned earlier that the old Truman Medical Center is no longer named for Truman.
That's true.
It's University Health. And last week we talked about the Truman Sports Complex not having Harry Truman's name. I do think there is some community sense that a major institution in Kansas City, other than the Truman Library, of course, needs to carry the Truman name, and maybe that's behind some of this discussion about the airport.
All right, we've really worked hard this week to cover a lot, but we didn't get to the biggest story of the week, a massive Patrick Mahomes head being installed in the Power and Light District. St. Louis has its arch. Can we finally say we've topped them?
It's not just a cold plunge in the shape of Patrick Mahomes' head. It's the chillest place on earth.
It's my head.
Take the plunge, July 19th at Kansas City Live.
that the biggest story we missed? Would you be lining up to take a cold plunge into the Chiefs quarterback's ultra-large noggin? Or did you pick a completely different story, Charlie? I know they've probably assigned you there. I think every reporter in town is going to be there. So don't make any news on that day.
Oh, I'm going to stick with the Chiefs and our big news. They loaded up for their training camp this week. You know, the season is upon us now when they start to go to St. Joseph. So they loaded all the chewing gum and weights and cleats and tracking devices and 11 semi-trucks and went to
You probably have KSHB helicopters traveling with those convoy of trucks getting into St. Joseph there. Thank you for that story, Brian.
You mentioned it very briefly at the start of the show, Nick, but I want to mention that flooding that happened on Thursday morning, seemingly relatively unexpected. Folks thought there would be some rain, but the flood warnings came pretty quickly and without a lot of notice. We see this more and more. We obviously saw a much more tragic flooding in Texas, but one has to wonder if emergency management and local public safety agencies are going to have to sit down and say, this is happening a lot, this is going to happen more often with climate change. What are we doing to ensure that there won't need to be, as there were this week, dozens of water rescues?
Lisa.
We'll go back to Wyandotte County for just a moment. On Wednesday night, commissioners in Wyandotte County in Kansas City, Kansas, voted to not continue with this revenue-neutral budget that froze property taxes in 2025. And so 2026, residents are likely to see property tax hikes again in a county where people have long complained about property taxes.
Yeah, and so I think that one of the great stories now going on under the radar in our region is a debate over the best way to tax citizens to pay for government. Property taxes, there'll be a real effort in Kansas and in some ways in Missouri to limit property tax assessments and appraisals and the property tax revenue. At the same time, in Missouri, there's discussion of ending the income tax. And Kansas is talking about further cuts in the income tax next year. So there is a discussion going on about how do we raise money for government? And nobody likes taxes, but somebody's got to pay money for police and fire and other things that are done in our name. Flood control is another example. And that will come to dominate, I think, politics in 2026.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez and Charlie Keegan from KSHB Channel 41, KCUR's Brian Ellison and news icon Dave Helling, and I'm Nick Haynes from all of us here at Kansas City PBS. Be well, keep calm, and carry on.